Oh yeah, we did
Welcome to the Aurora Economic Opportunities and Analysis Technical Advisory Committee meeting number two. It is March 18, 2023. I think we'll begin with introductions. We'll start with the people in the room to my right.
Hi, I'm Jerry Johnson with Johnson Economics.
Craig McNamara, Planning Commission.
Joseph Schaefer, City of Aurora.
Julie Sixkiller, Aurora resident and commercial and industrial property owner.
Correct, Joseph. It's actually 2024 already.
Oh, but, thank you.
Being a smart ass, I'm Bruce Bennett, yeah, Aurora Aviation.
Justin Benson, a resident.
Tyler Metzger's resident and Planning Commission member.
Brian Asher, Mayor of Aurora.
Bob Jones, property owner at the end of the airport.
Yeah. Jim Stewart, Planning Commission.
Stuart Rogers, city reporter. A few people online as well.
Yeah, folks online, if you could introduce yourselves.
Kurt Fisher, associate planner, Mid-Willamette Valley Council of Governments.
Hi, I'm Matt Lorenzen. I work for the city of Wilsonville and I oversee economic development. Thanks.
Stu Peterson, McAdam Forbes, commercial real estate.
Hi, I'm Jamie Jonk. I'm the Economic Development Director for the City of Woodburn.
Hi, everyone. I'm Melissa Ahrens. I'm the Mid-Willamette Valley Regional Representative with Department of Land Conservation and Development.
Okay, thanks, everyone. And for those of you online, thank you for your patience while we corrected the Zoom link. I am going to turn it over to Jerry Johnson.
All right, thanks. We got a little late on the start, so we'll try to keep this thing moving along. The point of today is to talk about some of the trends, pieces of data we've been picking up and analyzing. And I do want to get as much feedback as possible from the group. You guys are a technical advisory group, which means not a listening group. So we're assuming we're going to get feedback. We want feedback. And in our office, we call a lot of it collecting tea leaves and reading tea leaves. And so a lot of times we'll pull data and we'll see things and we'll try to figure out what it means. But typically the people who actually live in the community know what that is potentially or what's missing. And so we'll hope for you guys to correct this so we get a better product at the end. So can you start that one up? That's... bottom left.
Alex made it on.
There it is. All right.
Yeah, Jerry, before you start, Alex, I'm just going to announce that you are here. I see you joined. Welcome, everybody. Alex Thomas is a planner for the aviation planner, I think is the title, for the Oregon Department of Aviation.
All right. We can go to the first one thing. We just come to the agenda. Again, the objectives today is to talk about the trends, see what we're seeing out there. We'll discuss the target industries, basically industries the city thinks we should, wants to focus on going forward. And that'll be supported by some of the initial data and the ongoing discussion. We'll take an overview of the buildable land inventory that Mid-Willamette Valley Council of Governments has been working on. See if we can make sure we get feel comfortable with that. And then we'll be talking about the economic objectives, which is a big part of an EOA, which is what are you trying to accomplish? You get communities that want nothing to happen and which you can accomplish often as well. Although sometimes it's difficult, but you basically get to talk about what you'd like to see. So the communities, the intent of the EOAs is the community move forward with intent if they'd like to see more manufacturing employment, more industrial employment, more commercial employment, whatever they're trying to encourage or do, just make sure that their land use system aligns with what they're trying to accomplish. So we've got to sort of determine what areas they really like to focus on. We'll talk about what areas you're actually getting. So if we get to the next slide here. And so for this piece, we're doing the employment forecasts and associated land need will come next. And the buildable commercial land inventory. Right now, we're getting a first look at them. It'll be refined next time we go through, and there'll be a reconciliation, which is basically here's what we think you need in the next 20 years, here's what you have, and then what can you do about it? And sometimes it's just policy changes. Sometimes there's changes in land. Sometimes there's different things you can do, but you got to get the findings base established first of basically what you need and what you have. Next one. One more. All right. So employment growth in Marion County. You see Marion County has rebounded from the pandemic quite well, actually. Well above pre-pandemic employment levels now. Nice long extended expansion cycle after the 2009 recession, which was very serious for everybody, and held on through 2011. But a nice expansion cycle, and it's actually been quite robust in the last couple of years. So Marion County as a whole is doing quite well. For the next one, we take a look at employment growth. Marion County is outperforming the state of Oregon, which has not historically been the case. You historically largely mirror the state of Oregon or a little behind the state of Oregon. But both during the pandemic and after the pandemic, Marion County has been doing quite well. I think you're going to see increasingly a lot of that happen because of your position in the I-5 corridor, which is very important. Right. Population growth trends, you guys are actually positive. I live in Multnomah County, actually I live in Clackamas County, but next to Multnomah County, we're dealing with the fact of very slow population growth, negative population growth right now. We're seeing some population growth in Marion County, but certainly not at the rates we've seen before. This is a concern we're having. Well, nationally, we're going to have this issue anyways because of the aging of the population. And so that's a broad national trend, but regionally and locally, Willamette Valley has largely benefited from in-migration, sustained in-migration, relatively younger, employment-driven individuals coming into the communities, which is really important, keeps our sort of aging pyramid a pyramid as opposed to an inverted pyramid. And it's very good, and it's good for our employers too, because it provides a workforce. During the pandemic, we saw a lot less movement nationally, and we haven't seen a lot of return of that since the pandemic's been over in the state of Oregon. So I think a little bit, we're marketing less well to that group, but that's something people are really concerned about. It's a big difference economic development-wise if we have a labor force growth rate of 0.5% as opposed to like 1.6%, which is what we've been averaging in the last decade. In age distribution, Marion County and the city of Aurora, particularly the city of Aurora, is pretty old. Generally, mature. They're very mature. we just worked on a senior project, and the marketing was 55 and better. So you definitely have an aging demographic, and you can see your big group was 55 to 64 in 2012. Now it's, as one would expect, the 65 plus is a big group for you too. So you've got an aging demographic. It becomes an issue for labor force, but the county itself is actually relatively young. Commuting, this is where your residents work. It's not going to surprise people. Most people who are employed, active in the workforce, work either in the Portland area, Washington County, or Salem. And if you take a look at where people who work locally actually live, you've got a few of them live in Aurora, but they're really coming more from Salem and less from Portland, actually. We go to the next slide. Educational attainment. You guys are old, but you're well educated. You guys have a very high level of degree holders, associate degrees, less than high school. It's only 4.5% statewide at 8.4%. And Marion County, it's 14.3%. So you're an older, well-educated population. Next slide. Take a look at the industrial distributions and trends. This is by sector. And this is for the city of Aurora's urban growth boundary. So it doesn't include all the a lot of economic activity at the airport, right? That's not in the city's urban growth boundary. So that's going to be an add-on above and beyond if we take a look at it. It's sort of its own entity. But if you take a look at the distribution of employment, you'll see the accommodation food services being a big deal. You've got a lot of tourism trade, healthcare, social assistance, which is a big growing piece. And you've got agricultural production and manufacturing in your community. You've actually been losing a lot of employment, but really small numbers. You know, if you look up and down, it's like one or two for an awful lot of them. your waste management, one of your big things, the metals manufacturers, a loss of 14 jobs in that particular sector, but a combination food service. This is a change over the last decades. They had 41 jobs in healthcare and social systems, added 32. This is not atypical. Again, as an aging population, we expect the healthcare to continue to be a growing segment. And if you take a look at employees by firm size, you guys are relatively small, but actually you're not atypically small. Most employment in the state of Oregon is actually relatively small firms. Your firms, you've got quite a few firms up to in the 20 to 50 range. You don't have anything over 50 within the city itself. If you took the airport in, that would be probably a different number. And so with those background trends, we take a look at target industries. And we take a look for is a couple criteria. One is current concentrations. What do you have a lot of? So we take a look at the areas that you've actually had a lot of employment in. And clearly that's something that you guys are good at, or you have a comparative advantage. It's indicating growth prospects. What are ones that are forecasted in the region to be growing relatively quickly? So you target relatively fast growth industries. Which ones have attractive characteristics? A lot of times it's wage levels. Does it match your labor force? Is it have advantageous fiscal perspectives? There's differences in fiscal impact for certain types of industries. Certain industries basically are better for a jurisdiction's ongoing fiscal health because their property tax payments are relatively high and their service costs are relatively low. We went past one. We also take a look at what the region and state is targeting. We talked a little bit about some of that last time. We take a look at your local advantages, your basic SWOT. I mean, your biggest advantage, obviously, you have the historic piece in downtown, but your big advantage, I think, is your I-5 access is outstanding, much better than a lot of jurisdictions that have done very well working off I-5 access. And a lot of times you look for high impact. If you take a look at Business Oregon, they'll talk about traded sector. What that is export industries, people who trade outside of the community. If you track tourism in, tourism is actually a basic industry. It brings net new money into a community. If you just have the locals and you're just locals serving locals, it doesn't necessarily bring net new. But a lot of times they're talking about big groups like Intel that are basically producing product and they're shipping it out, bringing net money into the community. And so a lot of times they'll focus on what we call traded sector industries as ones that they think are more desirable. This is completely unreadable and I apologize for this. I always have at least one slide that nobody can read, including me. What we do for the location quotient analysis, this is basically an analysis that takes a look at your local distribution relative to the national distribution, tries to figure out if you're over or underrepresented in terms of certain industries, and they're get identified as export employment. Exactly. So we do this for some major industry things. Anything you see, employment LQ, that's employment location quotient. Anything over one means you have more as a percentage of your local population base than the national average. So forestry, fishing, hunting, ag is your big one. State government, you do very well in as well. Everything else, you got a couple near one, you've got construction, you've actually got quite a bit, but most of the stuff you're importing stuff in, you're not actually exporting out. Now your tourism piece, even that, your accommodation and food service, while you've got a big concentration of it, you're still only 80% of what the national average is for employment in that particular industry. So you would nimbly, for this sort of piece, this is how we figure out export industries. Even that doesn't come out as particularly relevant. It comes out relevant because it's a big piece of your economy, but it's not necessarily as big of an export as you might hope for. It's better that you have what you have, because otherwise everybody's leaving for tourism. You've got actually money coming in for tourism. And so if you can get it over to the side there, I know you blew it up, but I appreciate that. and this basically is like export employment by number of jobs, by industry. And again, the ag manufacturing is your big thing. You do have delivery, warehousing, wholesale trade, retail trade, and construction you're doing quite well with. We broke this out a little more tighter to give you a better feel. So So you still are doing well on your food service, your restaurants, your retail trade. Delivery warehouse and wholesale trade, you're doing relatively well, and that's without the industrial land. I mean, one of the advantages you have because of your proximity to I-5 is probably a lot of potential on distribution, warehouse, and so that could be a big growth prospect, but even without it, you're doing relatively well with it. We took a look at average annual wages by industry, just to give you an idea that finance, insurance, real estate people do really well. State government does pretty well too. But you know, the wage levels are, you know, a lot of the stuff, your particular profile, you've got some manufacturing that does quite well in wages. Typically your service industries pay a bit less, and your manufacturing industries pay a little bit more. You can go to the next slide. We can get to a normal size here. Oh yes, shift share is basically what are you doing relatively well national average. Take a look at the employment from 2012 to 2022. You take a look at what the growth rate nationally and regionally is relative to what your growth rate is, and it says that your accommodation food service is doing very well. And your healthcare and social assistance is doing really well. So again, that's just one of the other criteria we take a look at. We'll summarize them all at the end here. Let's go to the next one. Because these are just emerging and declining industries. Tons of stuff which is declining. You have representation. Oh, what did we do? Your growth ones are in the top right. That's where you want to be. So accommodation, food service, wood manufacturing, construction, healthcare. You've got quite a few mature, but they're also growing. So your economy is small, but it's relatively healthy. You've got a few declining, but you've got some good prospects. There'll be a detailed index of all these in the actual report when it gets written up. And these are the forecasts from the state, and they put Lynn, Marion, Polk, and Yamhill counties as one labor market. So the state forecasts your employment on this basis. This takes a look at the regional forecast growth over the next 10 years. They see transportation, warehousing, and utilities being the highest rate of growth in that next 10-year period. Following that, you start seeing leisure hospitality, which you're doing very well with. Education, health services, construction, information declining from there. Again, a lot of these industries are industries that you guys are already showing some strength in already, but they're expecting some real growth. There's what's called a safe harbor forecast. You could basically take the city's employment thing, apply the projected growth rates, and it's largely accepted. And Melissa can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but usually Deal City says, okay, that's good. You know, you're just taking your local distribution of employment and you're applying our forecasted growth rates by sector. And so that employment forecast is something we're sustained. The employment growth forecast is not that robust over the next things. I think it's, I think I lost the percentage rate, but yeah, I mean, it's not terrible though. So you got a 10% change, but it's over 10 years, right? And it's cumulative, so it's less than 1% a year employment growth. They're basically saying in this forecast. And then this is a sort of a summary of, we go through it, your current concentrations. These are the types of industries that are showing up as strong on your current concentration, which you're doing well right now. Which ones have strong growth prospects? Which ones have attractive characteristics, which again are primarily, at this point in time, not fiscal, but payroll, they good paying jobs, and regional statewide targets, what the state and the region have decided to target. And then our local advantages, your traded sector ones, which is really agriculture, warehouse, food manufacturing, where you guys are doing really well. And with that, what I sort of wanted to talk about is what do you guys really see going forward as far as what are the areas you think that you guys feel that the city of Aurora would be well served in targeting, making sure they're accommodating that growth. And I don't know if anyone's got strong feelings on it. We threw these all out here. I mean, typically you say you always want to support your existing business clusters, right? And you almost always have some statement, I want to support existing business clusters and help them to have ability to expand and grow in my community. Sometimes they can't. We worked at the city of Milwaukee on an EOA, and Bob's Red Mill had to locate an unincorporated Clackamas County because they couldn't find a site in the city of Milwaukee, which killed the city of Milwaukee. They were very unhappy because that was their homegrown company, and then they lost them because they didn't have a site. They didn't move that far. They just went out to 224, but they're not in the city anymore. So those are the types of pieces you feel. So almost always you'll have a statement that says, we want to encourage our existing businesses. Unless you have an existing business, you want to call out and say, we don't want to discourage. We want to discourage them, but everybody else can grow. I think that's typically a statement where you start off with, but the question is, you know, where do you want to go? I mean, if you look at this, you have a lot of opportunities. I mean, one really straightforward one outside of the stuff you existing have is you have some real opportunities for some distribution fulfillment type uses, industrial uses, because you've got flat lands across creek that have access to I-5. And Stu can speak to this more than I can, but we've seen prices on I-5 land just go astronomical in Tualatin and Wilsonville because there isn't any. We just finished working with Jamie on the city of Woodburn, who's done very well with their industrial land and to bring some more in again. So I think that's a potential opportunity if you guys have interest in it, is going for some of that industrial uses. We've worked with this Portland metropolitan area, and they're not accommodating those. And I don't expect they're going to accommodate much of it in the future either. So I think those opportunities are there if you guys want to try to grab them.
So what I would say, Jerry, regarding our current businesses, you know, our industrial land is on the west side of the 99 here in the gray, shown on this comp plan map behind me. And it's relatively small lots, you know, an acre to 3 or 4 or 5 acres. And Tyler's family has a few of these, so they've got, I don't know, total acres, 15 or 20?
We have 30 there.
30? And they recently put up a large building last year?
Yeah.
And, you know, still have some room for expansion.
Okay.
We have one property, and this is a change in the BLI. It's a combination of industrial and commercial that we originally didn't have on the inventory because there was a planned user, but they hit some snags, including interest rates. And so that project fell through. So that's back on there. So for our existing, you know, blue collar type businesses, there are some sites, but not significantly sized ones. And then, you know, perhaps it goes without saying, but we have a bit of a bottleneck here in our intersection. Well,
this becomes an issue when I talk about ease to get to I-5. It would not be through that intersection.
Exactly.
And you're probably not going to want to encourage a whole bunch of additional truck traffic running through downtown and out.
Exactly. And then we also have quite a bit
of what's encouraging it from other places.
And then for folks who aren't real familiar with town, west of town across the railroad tracks was quite a bit of topography. You can see the creek winding through there, a lot of steep ground, large floodplain. West of the creek, steep ground. It's great for the Aurora Colony vineyards. They have dozens of acres of south-facing slope for their grapes and such, but not very good for warehousing or trucks or other commercial-type uses that desire to have flat land. Same is fairly true on the other side of 99. You know, we have this area zoned for future residential, but pretty soon it drops off to the Pudding River. Again, very large floodplain and not much room for larger scale commercial use of any kind. And again, if we did, it would have that same constraints.
That you're going through the bottleneck. Yeah. And I don't know, we did, you know, within the urban growth boundary, we haven't gotten to the point to take a look at it. But that area to the west of town, it just, to me, it seems like on a fiscal stand basis, you know, ideally you'd like people to get onto ODOT facilities as quickly as possible and stay off city roads from a fiscal standpoint. And so, you know, if you orient some of the industrial in that direction, you get more of that effect, right? Where you're getting the assessed valuation of commercial and industrial uses, which is positive. And you're not getting the, a lot of the externalities, you're getting them onto ODOT facilities quickly. ODOT's not at this meeting, right? We always try to get them onto ODOT.
Yeah, so we have two ODOT facilities, Highway 99E, obviously, which is the original sort of north-south route through the Willamette Valley. And then it's a little west of the maps. You can just see the one corner up here is Highway 551, commonly known as the Hubbard Expressway, which runs along the west boundary of the airport.
One of the things we take a look at, we talk a little bit later in this, SWOT, maybe Bruce, you can help with this, which is, you know, the airport is... it's a key regional attribute, and it's been a very successful focus of economic development. You've got a lot of employers there. Are there things that they would like to see that they could use some help with, like additional land supplies or infrastructure things that help out the concentration at the airport right now?
It's hard to say. The airport is very successful. There's more than twice as many jobs as there are citizens at Aurora. But it's not a city and doesn't want to be. It's its own little island of specialty jobs. And there's not a lot of real estate left over, as you know, from aerial photograph. It's just a bit yet undeveloped.
Is it restricted to airport dependent uses within the? You guys are within the fence, right? Or
yeah, the zoning is aviation related.
Okay, so it's all
actually it's a P public. It's a little convoluted. It's public zoning, but being as that is an airport, development requires a conditional use. Mm-hmm. To grant those based on it being an aviation.
Right. And the FAA's got to get.
The FAA's the prime. You know, Aurora is an unusual airport. Of course, it's a state airport. The runway, the taxiway, and about a quarter of the real estate is owned by the state and then leased out to developers, owners.
Now, your runway is north-south predominantly, right?
Correct.
So you're going to have to worry about the advance. Any land uses out in that area, you can have restrictions from the FAA anyways, right? On the which industrial uses are allowed, but
yes, the
commercial uses to
the restrictions really off the north and south end,
right?
Approaching aircraft, there's a three dimension drawing. There's a slope that can't be impinged upon off both sides of the runway, but it's pretty steep. But then off the ends of the runway, that's also where the noise sensitivity is, because the aircraft are taking off and landing.
Mm-hmm.
The airport's goal in zoning would be a kind of a negative goal, not things that it needs, but things that could be very dangerous and problematic, like building houses right off the end of the runway.
Oh yeah, well, FAA never.
they do.
Do they?
There's a slope. As long as it's below that slope, okay, they're fine with it. But the people that end up buying the house become very unhappy with it. So that's the thing to protect.
I guess we have run that slope. We've done development in downtown Vancouver, and because of the little airport,
Pearson Air Park.
Yeah. Pearson Air Park. They've got height restrictions on even on the waterfront Vancouver. There's portions that they can't come up on.
The FAA is our main. So that. The state owns the airport, but the main source of the main investor is the Federal Aviation Reserve, and they oversee any development. It's got to fall since they spend the money on the runway and approach services and air traffic control tower. It's very critical to them that any development happens per their guidance.
Right. What I was actually more interested in, because I thought it might be airport dependent within the fence, But are there support uses that would be helpful to your employers within the fence, the airport related, but stuff that's not, if it's unrestricted airport related, which anything the city did over there wouldn't have those restrictions. It still have the restrictions from the FAA.
Yeah.
But
I guess, yes, a restaurant. Langdon Farms isn't very popular, and probably every restaurant in the Aurora area benefits hugely from the airport to the colony or the and the bakery. Yeah, there's a lot of business comes to the restaurants, and of course a fuel station. Lodging would be a benefit. I can't recall the number, but I think the airport uses 4,000 motel rooms per year. But they use them, of course, in Wilsonville. It's a lot like Combi helicopters, and the big operators have people coming in from all over the world, and they stay for a night or a week or a month on site. Okay. And so the lodging is critical. Car rental, the airport uses automobiles from Wilsonville.
And so, excuse me, I'm Bob Jones, I'm a landowner over here. Hi, Bob. Explain to me what's bad about being in the city.
There's no benefit to it. There's nothing the city has.
Because you would have city water for the size of planes that you're running for fire protection, which you don't have.
And we do. We have a fire suppression system.
But you don't have a big enough one for the type of planes you're flying.
I don't believe that's true. Unlike the real, I personally helped set that up. We did
Control District. How many jets were coming in there?
We don't measure by the type of aircraft. There's almost 100,000 operations per year, and that's actually gone down, as you know, since the 70s. But the type of airplane worldwide has changed. So they're not building the pistons like
you. You don't want the city water?
I don't see a need for it, no.
Okay.
We want to work synergistically. It's always respected the city of Aurora and worked, and thus the business we give, the motel rooms and or the restaurants and the fuel and and let me back up a little bit. I can't speak. There is no one person that can speak for the Aurora Airport. It's hundreds of individuals.
And
the state owns the runway.
I understand.
I'm just saying from my experience. I've been there for 56, a property owner for 56 years,
right,
and have operated a business for most of that. So I have a good feel for what goes on.
The federal government doesn't have any requirements for water their funding apparatus.
The reason we put in the fire suppression system was for the county. They require fire. Mm-hmm. It was a big deal. It was $776,000 20 years ago.
About more than that today.
Touch more.
Remember, that seemed huge. But yeah, unlike the property around us, the Aurora Airport from 1943 until we put that system in, we rely on Aurora to empty its water truck and then drive back and forth to the Willamette River and fill it up. With an active fire, that wouldn't be a successful operation. But we do now have a significant water suppression system.
But it's been 20 years since it's been looked at.
Since it was originally installed, it has a routine maintenance and operation. Back to Synergy, the Aurora Fire Department needs the airport's one of their main, because of our immense property taxes, we're one of their main supporters. And, and they need training, and they come out and train with the systems, and which is good for us to make sure. We want to know it works well too.
And if the system goes empty, how long does it take to fill about?
It's 600,000 gallons, it would be quite a while. It'd be back to it's filled with a well, so that just keeps it topped off for leaks and practice usage. If somehow there is a that'd be a fire that's hasn't been conceived that would empty it.
Well, for other pieces now, are there other types of uses you guys would like to see if you were the mayor of this town and you're talking to people at the over at the pub?
Put it all on me. Huh?
And yeah, so what do they complain we ought to have in town?
Well, I think definitely need to do more entertainment.
Entertainment options.
Our number one traffic flow. We're a unique and fabulous experience for people. And I think everybody here tries to do something different and unusual. So our little monthly or weekly operations that we do on the weekends are all oriented towards family.
Do you guys have like program concert series or anything?
Yes, we have that in the springtime and in the early summer. We do all of those pre-concerts, and then of course we do our colony days, but they do a wine and chocolate walk, and there's museum tours and museum things that are related, and there's Easter bunny hunts and any kind of little stick, as you say, or whatever, however you want to call that, to attract different people, and have people come all the time. Of course, our antique business, although that's run by all us older folks, in town, but it's well known in the world for that. Mm-hmm. To come here for those type of things.
Well, with the aging for healthcare, where do people? I mean, how's your healthcare system locally? I mean, your access to healthcare.
Well,
when you guys go in.
Local would be, I would say, Pfizer and Walton, mostly. Where everybody goes, or either a Kaiser or their Providence or their Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and all they'll go into Beaverton for.
Then we'll go down to Salem to the.
And then you go to Salem and you have the Salem Health and you have a Kaiser facility down there, among a couple other little things. There's a nice hospital down there. It's all. But we're talking about 30-minute ride.
Right.
General.
Yeah.
Get to where we have to go, and another 30 or so to get to the Kaiser facility, if that was a hospital, and picking on Kaiser. But I don't know what Woodburn has. They probably have an emergency kind of center.
Urgent care type stuff.
Can be. There's one, and then Woodburn is one as well.
Right.
So Salute and Woodburn, and you got Providence by Fred Meyers and Canby.
Okay.
For the minor things, that's where our crew or we go. Otherwise, it's a hospital in Meridian Park.
Yeah, right. It's like bigger areas are downtown Portland. And as far as like care facilities and stuff, we don't really have that in Aurora to speak of. Mm-hmm. There are lots of homes and spaces, you know, in Woodburn. Seems to be the Woodburn Estates, and all of those seem to be the places where they're going. And then we have Canby right across that has a large facility, and
senior, like senior care.
Senior care. Oh, yeah. Charbonneau.
Huge one, Charbonneau.
Oh, Charbonneau, yeah.
Charbonneau's got
springs
or whatever they call them. You know, there's nothing going over to Butteville or over in that particular area. No facilities or anything. It'd be a beautiful place for one, but there's none of that available.
So I guess that's later, but we should go to the next slide then.
Hope I gave you enough stuff.
Well, there's always more. I mean, if people come up with stuff and say, look, I really totally dislike a certain industry, I really want to do something that's great to do. This is the buildable lands piece, and this is not my work, but whose work it is on the phone here. But and hopefully I got your right list on here. I apologize. Well, I guess the wrong one was circulating around, had been updated. This is a summary of the current buildable land inventory that we have. Commercial redevelopable means that it's improved, but it's maybe underimproved, and there's potential for more density on it. the vacant is clearly just vacant, and then there's industrial redevelopable and industrial vacant. And if we go to the map, maybe the easier way with it. And you can see on the map,
red.
Especially when you talk about
the red stuff there.
What's actually?
Yeah, the red is buildable.
Yeah, you know, these take a long time in a lot of jurisdictions. This is, you pretty much drive up and down the road here. You can look out the window and do your buildable land inventory.
Railroad. Right.
But, you know, it's actually useful. This is actually, buildable land inventory is actually where it's best to talk to the locals, because a lot of times you guys know what's right or wrong with these sites, because people have tried to do something or missing something. So, I mean, if we see glaring errors in any of this stuff or things that we really think shouldn't be on this, we should be ready. It's not only one of the things that we found in the past that's a real common mistake in economic opportunities assessments is phantom inventory. So if you have a site on there that you say is available, but there's actually no way to develop it because you'd have to bridge a stream that would cost more than the land's worth, it's just useful to flag those and say, look, you got to stop counting that because that's on your inventory. We can't add other industrial land and nobody can develop that because something's wrong with it. And sometimes the maps are just wrong. I mean,
quite a bit of that on the west side of the highway. Undevelopable land there. It's just complete slope straight down into a ravine. You know, it's.
Yeah, a couple of those. One, the one there in black.
Yeah, that black right there. Length.
And the one in red next to it. The one in red next to it actually has a business on it, on a. In the front corner of the property, but much of the rest of it is topographically challenged. We don't. There's a spreadsheet that will come later that talks and or lists in more detail features of all these properties, such as freeway access and rail access and topography. But yeah, we should probably look at those too.
Now we had a topography. You guys, we did a slope break on this too for the topography. And I forget what slope we set.
I think it was 5%. And those two are going to be more like 25.
Yeah, it's really hard to do industrial on 25%.
Although we do have one in their contractor is acquired. And they're working on it, doing sort of a two-level thing where they're going to have their office. That was the plan.
And then
office basically fronting on 99 and their
storage
grading
down below
in the back.
So terrace it into two pieces.
So the terrace it into two, yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's a kind of a unique self-help where someone can absorb that cost.
Construction company.
So
they have the laying around.
They have the know-how, and on a slow day they can, you know, make use of their equipment and crews. For a developer to sort of do it, it would probably be cost prohibitive. But again, you can see the size of those lots. I mean, that's not a lot of area. That black one is maybe an acre at most. Yeah. And so for the just precisely right size company with the right expertise, you know, it fits. But in terms of going to the larger marketplace for industrial users or larger commercial users.
Yeah.
You know.
Actually, since we have Stu here, Stu, do you want to chime in on what the sweet spot would be for site sizes that you would see? Or what's your
the larger the better. I mean the size du jour. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
The size du jour these days is 100 to 150,000 square foot buildings. You know, if you look at the last five projects that have been undertaken along the South I-5 market, which is what your competition is, you know, they're 25 to 30 acre sites. And that provides you with mixed use employment, manufacturing, assembly, some you know, what I'm going to call site-specific retail, not necessarily community-oriented, although I don't know why you couldn't do that, and warehouse and, you know, freight forwarding, that type of thing. It, you know, there's countless examples that if somebody wants to get in a car with me, I can drive and buy them, but, you know, it's what you want, in my opinion, because it is mixed use. It doesn't rely on one employer. It's eminently financeable by the bank, so it gets developed, so you don't zone yourself into a corner where you can't do anything. So those are my comments. I mean, that's those size sites, you know, 20 to 30 acres are just about right.
And Stu, this is Joseph. What would you suggest is sort of the bottom end of that? Like, if you were in charge of the zoning, what would you put as a minimum lot size?
Oh boy, you know, not a fan of minimum lot sizes, but 5 acres.
Don't be strict.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you know, 1 acre, you know, you've got a lot of local businesses that can't afford to buy 5 acres. So if they expand, it's nice to have, you know, 1 acre tracts. But I presume after you, unless you're talking about a minimum lot size in a district, I presume after you zone this stuff, you could still subdivide the lots. But the key thing is what you need with that freeway access there, which is, you know, is about as good as anything there is left in the state, frankly, is you need some big lots.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, Joseph, what's the zoning for your industrial look like? It's probably an old zone, but I don't know.
Most of our zoning code was written in 2002.
Oh, so that's super.
Right. Yeah, the historic district code was rewritten in 2013. I don't know if we have a minimum lot size in that industrial zone. We do allow a fairly wide range of uses. The most recent projects to be developed, we have a electric contractor, was that zoned industrial? No, it's commercial. We've had this site back here off Ottaway, I think is probably where we lost that metals employment.
Oh, okay.
There's a big fab user there that, as I understand it, is not in business anymore, but they have some different businesses in their original building, and they constructed 3 smaller buildings in there. I'm not sure what's in there now. We did have a marijuana grower. We had a person that...
Plastic recycler in there? Yeah. No, it's a plastic recycler.
Okay.
Grinds it up.
We had a company that bought new boats and sort of upgraded them with a variety of finishes and, you know, other things. So I guess you might call it small scale manufacturing. The one that fell through recently was going to be a motorboat sales company that was going to build a very large warehouse just for boat storage.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the type of industrial users that we.
Do you guys allow a commercial, like commercial support uses? This has become an issue. I'm thinking about what Bruce had mentioned, the stuff he's looking for that would be helpful for the airport. And we've done this with other jurisdictions where they allow some level of restaurant, deli,
right.
You know, sometimes even a hotel. Like we got a hotel in Giles Lake in Northwest Industrial District in Portland.
Right.
Saying, look, we generate a lot of hotel room demand in this industrial district. Can we get?
I don't think our industrial zone allows those kind of uses. Give me a second and I'll check.
What do you do right now?
At least for now, you know, we're fairly linear here. With 99. So the idea is, you know, it's not necessary in the industrial zone because you've got commercial literally next door.
Yeah, you're right. For that one, for sure, it makes sense. You can get wild. We got the Top Golf in as an industrial support use in Hillsboro. You can stretch that a little bit. There's a lot of
industrial out there. We like the Top Golf.
Those nets might be bad for the planes, so though. I don't know. They're pretty high.
Yeah. 5 stories. Right. Launching balls.
Yeah. A little business.
Do you have a fireworks manufacturer that makes fireworks?
Oh, do you have fireworks?
He's a big guy. Huh? Buried back in there. That's he's by himself.
And then Tyler's family's company does flowers, Oregon flowers.
Oh, okay. So you may be our agricultural employer that's looking.
I think we are then.
All right.
We had to get off the call, so.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. Hopefully Jamie's going to get her adjustment. We just worked with her earlier this year. They've done a lot with their one, and now they want another one.
They can do in the same area?
Yeah. The infrastructure was a huge problem for them because they had interchange because of the factory outlet center was completely overloaded.
Yeah.
So they need to get reworked. But now that it's reworked, they're going to try to overload it again and do another one.
one more positive thing for the airport, and I don't know if this makes any sense, but history, a golf course. You know, there's no real tall developments. No one sleeps there. Huh? And as you know, Langer, it just makes a good neighbor. There's no conflicts. And Langer Farm seems really busy. That's become the de facto lunch.
The restaurant's good there, yeah.
So close, yeah.
That's not their ultimate goal. Owner's ultimate goal is not.
It's not paying the course.
That's a plug into the tax bracket.
Yeah, unfortunately.
They would love to be an industrial park there. I mean, that'd be their ultimate goal.
Wouldn't be near as nice as
it's not going to happen, but it's, you know, that's what they would like because of the I-5. You know, they were smart when they bought it.
Yeah, it's a good location.
5 years ago or whenever they did buy that.
Yeah, it was a huge improvement what they've done.
Yeah.
It's always been one where that real estate seemed like it was worth more than a golf course. But
well, it's a placeholder.
Yeah.
I mean, golf courses are often used as placeholders for real estate development. So you have an area that is not ready to be developed at industrial or urban scale yet, but you think it's coming, and so you put a golf course in.
Yeah. Mobile home parks were another one that filled in those slots. Used to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But now it's a little harder to move those. Yeah.
Well, apparently, Red Tail, they wants to be a baseball park, right? Major League
Baseball. Yeah,
Oregon.
Yeah, no,
it's a lot of land.
All right. So, three of people have specific comments on the that you want to address or make sure we can.
5,427 items and counting.
All right. Next, then.
One more time.
So, I want to talk a little bit about the economic objectives. So, the question is first, do you guys actually want growth? I mean, as a city, and then when you're talking about growth, is there types of growth you would object to and types of growth you're supportive of? And again, we iterate stuff that we were talking about before, which is capitalizing on your advantages, which to me, these are mine, so you can change them. They can be yours. It's proximity and access to I-5. Someone's.
You didn't mind me to mute.
You just know.
Oh, no, just,
okay. Okay. The airport, state airport. That's nice. The state airport. As an advantage, your existing industry clusters, which is going to be both the ag and the and some of the tourism and retail pieces.
Antiques.
The what?
The antiques.
And the antiques, yeah. And the antique piece.
Retail.
Retail and antiques. Make sure we get those on there. Or this project already. I've been trying to find these doorknobs. I've been going through all your places because I have an old house and I can't get doorknobs that match. Fiscal sustainability, which is something that we talk about sometimes, everybody talks about, in a property tax dependent state like the state of Oregon for local government, being residential only is a tough position to be in. And most jurisdictions like to balance that. Cities like Hillsborough have a lot of money, and it's not a surprise why. They've got a lot of tax base on there. And so a lot of jurisdictions like that for long-term sustainability. Local employment opportunities, this is my typo that I picked on one but didn't make on this one. So it's provide, not provid. This is basically matching your local workforce. I mean, you've got an aging workforce, but of course the always issue, do you want to make sure, you know, kids and grandkids or people coming in have places to work suitable? You actually have a lot of employment. In fact, you're not really a net exporter of labor. You're not truly a bedroom community, particularly if you include the broader airport. You guys are actually a net importer of labor. So you actually have people coming in, more people coming into work than people live here leaving to work. If you don't include the airport, you're leaving. But if you throw the airport area in, you know, you're net in. And a lot of jurisdictions have that. Doesn't mean they'll be the same people. City of Milwaukee is where the entire city leaves, an entirely new group of people comes in and works there. But they're balanced. They have the right amount of employment relative to their population and workforce. It's just, it's different people. Now, commutes are not that hard around here outside of the bottlenecks, but typically we'll have something about making sure that we have employment opportunities consistent with local. And some of this may be actual service needs for local population. If you are going to be an aging population, and that may not be what you're aspiring to, but I guess
if you've got the cure, let us know.
Well, I mean, if you're not aging, the option isn't good. Yeah. So again, the option to not age is
a different option,
but
I would just add one thing that fits into the mix here. We have very low turnover of our residential neighborhoods here in town. A lot of people like myself come here and decide it's a really nice place and stay for a long time. So there's just not a lot of turnover. There's not a lot of new listings coming up, and when they do come up, the last one I'm familiar with, Tom Potter's house, sold in 2 days.
Yeah. If we built 50, 60 houses south, they'd be gone in a day.
Right away.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So you guys have gone through your housing needs stuff recently, or?
Well, we've got a vacant land, all this down here in the salmon colored and the tan colored. So that is our supply of housing land. And then we've got about 10 acres up here and one ownership. And then there's some of these lots are sort of underdeveloped where people could do, you know, partitions or subdivisions.
Okay.
So we've got.
You still have some residential capacity.
Yeah, we still have.
We have to get our sewer plant in and up and water. Those are the two things that are holding that back.
Okay.
So pretty quickly when that all happens, they're kind of chomping at the bit to build.
So do you guys have limitations on like water, sewer? How's your capacity in this if you guys expand in industrial? Because some users have much bigger impact than others. Food processing has huge water.
Yeah. So the mayor is much too modest. So I'm going to say what a great job he's done in recent years raising money for infrastructure. It sort of falls into two categories, at least in my mind. We passed a bond with the voters last year for $7 million for water, sewer, and a new city hall. I don't think I need to explain that. And then also from the state legislature through federal funds, we've received commitments for $15 million for water and sewer. It's about 5 for water and 10 for sewer. Is that right?
About 16.5, and then another million for the well.
Yeah. Okay. So we're putting
some here or whatever.
Yeah. So we're
just bonuses.
We're putting a new 1.2 million gallon water reservoir up on the north part of town, right about there.
About 5 acres up there. Put that on.
Far enough northwest corner. And the reason we went up there is it's high.
So you got gravity feet.
We have gravity, and it's also the opposite side of town from our existing water reservoir, so we can loop the pressure.
Okay.
Loop the system to maintain the pressure. And then the city council is moving forward with major upgrades to the sewer plant. We've got the engineer's contract. I'm not sure if it's signed yet, but I think it's basically been approved by the city council. And that will, again, utilize a lot of state funds and bond monies to increase the capacity at the plant.
Okay. Well, that'll be a mechanical plant, which is, you know, a lot more efficient at what it does and can handle a lot more volume. So we're easily into the next 20 to 25 years for growth plus.
All right. Well, good. So. Well, sometimes those are limitations occasionally in certain areas you can or can't serve. And that's later. This is... Once you just have an issue, yeah. Like if I need industrial property to support these industries, where do I put it? And where you can serve it is often a real issue.
Yeah, we had one potential person who was interested in doing an industrial type laundry where they provide linens for weddings and uniforms and stuff like that. They would have been a very large water user. Yeah, we're not set up for a really large scale water user.
Just have to approach that when the time comes.
We're doing a very large scale water user, but they're a water borrower because we're doing some of the data processing centers in Eastern Oregon. They don't actually use the water; they cool with it.
They cool with it,
and then they're putting it back in the irrigation canals.
Right.
So that's their issue. It's like it comes in warm, but it's going to top of the crop, so it's okay. But you got to be really careful with that. But the water use. In fact, the city of Hillsborough ran out of water capacity.
Yeah.
Well, that was a big limiting factor for them.
Are they still going to raise Hag Lake for that?
No, they ended up with a different thing. But they've been looking at that Hag Lake thing and pricing. They have to raise the dam and
right.
They're going to have a lot of money to work with pretty quick here.
Yeah.
The governor does a little of this. That's where bulk of that money is going to go.
All right. And then supporting remote working. I don't know if you guys are seeing much of this. We're getting a lot of communities. You're doing some of this. But we're getting a lot of communities that have been really benefiting or also conversely been upset by remote work. Like we did one in Sisters recently, and Sisters has been overwhelmed, and their housing market's been overwhelmed by remote workers. Because they're getting people from the Bay Area who, you know, the Bay Area salary goes a long way in Central Oregon, and then it's hard for the locals to actually live in their own community, which is a difficult thing. But, you know, we've got more and more remote work, and so what it's done is... In urban economics, called the bid rent curve, where you pay more to be close to where you work, and that's your transportation cost is why you pay more for it. If I'm not coming into work except for 2-3 days a week, I'll live farther out because I can deal with that commute if I'm only doing it twice. I may not want to do it 5 days a week. So we're seeing Hood River's gone crazy. The Dalles is getting remote work. White Salmon. We're getting a lot of communities that the remote work is hitting them. And it's been communities like Aurora that are attractive, smaller communities that people say, hey, I want to live in this community. But then you get a disconnect between your local labor force and your housing markets because
they don't have housing for that.
You don't have any housing, so they can't remote work here anyways.
Out in the county and out of Bill or buying in those kind of remote, in those kind of areas or down out this way in Clackamas County or
But so that hasn't been a major, you got a couple of you guys.
Well, not major, but there are more people in town during banker's hours, so to speak. So if you try to get lunch at the pub or you try to get breakfast at the bakery, it's a lot more crowded than it was pre-pandemic.
The highway is providing those services. You know, we could use more of those services.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then increased capture regional growth. Again, this is basically an opportunity that's out there for you. I mean, as Stu has mentioned, I talked about earlier, there's tons of regional growth, and for employers, they're just trying to get on the I-5 corridor. And you get between Salem and Ridgefield, that's great. Maybe up to, you know, Longview to south of Salem. You get people trying to get in that corridor, and the opportunities are less. So as a small jurisdiction, there's a high likelihood you guys could easily get a shift of growth that's happening in the corridor already. You know, your share right now may be 1% and you can go up to 10%. It's a big move for you. It's not much for maybe a big jurisdiction, but it's fairly significant.
in my view of the reason for capturing that is it's compatible with the airport. I mean, you've heard Bruce comment about, you know, they're very concerned and logically so about getting incompatible uses nearby. And it's no secret that airports, you know, commonly have a lot of industrial development around them. We do need to be careful about having, at least in my mind, you know, we don't want dense employment or any other buildings, public assembly buildings of any type, north or south of the runway. Mm-hmm. But we do want to have, as the city grows and the airport grows, we want to avoid sort of the fundamental land use conflicts that happen when you have incompatible uses.
Mm-hmm. We want to keep the charm.
Yeah. Well, to some extent, the choke point's sort of nice because it separates, if you have industrial over there to the west, you know, the charming part of the city is separate.
Correct.
Not that the industrial is not charming, but
yeah, and
that's a different charm.
And we do get a very large amount of truck traffic from Canby.
Oh, right.
You know, anyone in the Canby industrial area that's going south comes right through downtown and through that choke point. That's part of why it's a choke point. One of the biggest developments in Canby has been Columbia Distributors, which is beverages. And those trucks are heavy. And so when they stop at the intersection, they accelerate really slowly from a dead stop.
Yeah, three produce companies moved over there out of Portland. Because things just cost too much money in the cities.
Yeah. Well, and there's, you know, they sort of, I don't know, discouraging them. They're just not accommodating them.
Yeah.
No, the city has not done a good job of trying to keep its industrial people happy.
No. I'm trying to work with Metro right now, but that's a different issue. They're not, I don't think there's great hope that they're going to accommodate much in the future either. So, we hope to get Sherwood, get some property, try to fight for them, but it's tough. So, I mean, to some extent, it's great for you guys. I mean, if you want to get some of the employment, it's there. And you can be somewhat selective about it, probably. You'll have some good sites. There's plenty of good developers out there right now. Industrial is one of the few markets that you could actually still do development. It's not as good as it was pre-interest rate move, but there's very few other land uses right now that are actually really working. Which is, I say that, I bemoan it because that's my, used to be my primary business was feasibility work for development, and there's no development right now. So nothing works.
I wouldn't go that far. But certainly, you know, office, forget about it.
Yeah, office will be a decade until we see anything. Medical office, maybe.
Medical office, maybe, yeah. And, you know, multifamily is doing well, at least in my office. We got a lot of projects.
They're still building.
And, you know, both.
Retirement home type places.
Yeah, yes. Seniors.
Senior living.
Senior still works.
And then single family is still going steadily. We are seeing large subdivisions where they're available. The last thing I did before I came over here was bark at a city about not helping us with infrastructure enough to do, I think it's 520 or 530 house project. So that demand is there. It's again, the interest rates, okay. But home sizes in terms of square foot per house are coming down. Metro is really pushing, and the state is really pushing for smaller lots. So you see most newer single family residential developments don't have what old people like us consider a yard. And you know, I worked on one today. It's 18 lots in Washington County. The lots are 2,000 square feet.
Yeah, we've worked on some of those. If you put a swing set for your kid, you can only do it one direction because there's don't have the swing radius to move back in the fence.
But yeah, in this market, interest rates are tough. We lost the boat warehouse in large part because of that. And
Well, that's a 20-year forecast, so we assume things will come back to an equilibrium. They always do. Yeah, sure. You can't get caught up on the short term and say,
no,
never going to work. It's like, all right. And always support existing businesses. But we throw it on there, but it's always usually the best source of growth is to make sure your existing business, if they're expanding, is there something they need? And so you have the existing business owner here. Is there particular things you wish the city had that would help support you guys?
You know, land, well, big parcels of land for farming. That's what we see. I mean, 1 acres, 2 acre lots for a company like we have doesn't really do anything.
Right.
I mean, and then I think we're still considered a small business. So I think most people will be looking for a nice, good chunk of land with potential to grow on it. And it's really kind of run out here in Aurora, it seems like.
Now, is your use allowed outside the urban growth boundary, what you're doing?
Yeah.
So you could pick up cheaper land in the ag stuff.
Not the North Valley land isn't cheap.
Yeah, if you have to, you do. We can farm anywhere. We're just farmers. We're flower farming. So we just do it in glass greenhouses. Yeah, I think the availability of land for us is something that we're watching. Mm-hmm. And just the way the city is kind of is grown, you have the railroad, you have 99E, and we're kind of in that teardrop more or less spot, but we're starting to run out of land on either end too. So kind of, yeah, those are all things that we look at. And my dad was sitting at this table, he would never think of where we are now. We started with 5 acres. But then with the vision growing, eventually you run out of those 30 acres that are neighboring. And then the only thing that's left is a 2 acre there and a 2 acre here. Well, that doesn't really kind of move things anymore. Mm-hmm. So generationally thinking, yeah, you just don't know where you'll be down the road. But big pieces of land is always something that I guess spark your interest more so than just a piece of land here or there.
60, 80, 100 acre. What he's looking for, I would say.
Yeah, and I think we're farming. So, I mean, also keep it in mind, most farmers are thinking long-term. So if they could find a piece of land that's neighboring city, that's also an opportunity for succession plan. If, say, you know, the next generation has no interest of being a farmer anymore. And nowadays, being a farmer is pretty rare. Mm-hmm. I think this the first off, any second generation business to continue is like a 50% success rate. And so it's already very challenging for any business to continue as a second generation. So those are all things that just kind of come to mind as being a business owner in agriculture. It's just land and where the opportunity lies.
Okay.
I would say some of our industrial land back here could use some infrastructure help. You know, some of the land that is vacant is basically does not have. It's not vacant because there used to be a building there that somebody took down. It's vacant because no one's ever really developed it at urban scale with, you know, water supply and fire hydrants and all that kind of stuff.
Sewer
extensions.
Across the railroad track to get across. So we'd have to bring it up to where we do have a crossing.
Or even just the people back here, you know, getting their services out to 99. In other words, these are not like lots in an industrial subdivision where the land, you know, comes with water and sewer stubs and
right.
A stormwater pond that's ready to plug and jug.
Mm-hmm. All right. With good differentiation almost. I mean, to some extent, if you bring in the big, you know, Trammell Crow Prologis type industrial developers, they're going to want their big pieces of land. They'll want them more homogenous like that, and just
yeah,
give you a little price differential where you're at, where you've got less competition from those guys.
Yes.
You don't need them running around paying $22 a square foot for industrial land, which they will nowadays.
Yeah, they will. That's down here, but again, we also have smaller businesses that have been successful in recent years.
Right, and you can work those small sites too, yeah. It's good for the whole range. Again, when you look at the profile of your firms by size, you got a lot of small business.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, and what do we have next here? Oh, this is next steps. We're going to come back with a list of target industries, and we'll just give you a short list next time, and we'll talk about that just to make sure we get check off with it. We'll have a land need forecast, which is basically taking a look at the forecast of employment with different pieces and the target industries, look at what kind of support you have or demand for land in the area, reconciling that with your buildable land inventory, which, again, what you need, what you have. And then the tech meeting three, we'll start talking about the findings and what we can do about it. Because that's sort of the next step. I mean, maybe you find that you don't have a problem at all, and then there's nothing to talk about. But if that's out of balance, or you think you need something or something else could happen, we just start talking about it, because then we start putting in sort of, you know, policy recommendations for the city. You know, next step. So here's where our economic objectives for the city don't align with what our available inventory is, and what do we do about it? And some of it's just rezoning or re-entitlement or changing some of the codes written, maybe as recommendations. Sometimes it's change additional lands. And so all that stuff comes up. So I think the next meeting is going to be much more of a rolling discussion. It'll be this broad conclusion piece, but then hopefully, you know, where we go from here. I mean, because the jurisdiction, you can't just say you got a problem and then walk away. You got to say, what are you supposed to do about it?
Jerry, what would you say about scheduling? When should we think about that?
Well, this stage we're, you know, it's, let's see, we're mid-March, like later April, maybe, or May, early May.
Late April, May.
This stage doesn't take that long. The policy piece takes longer, which is what you do about it. But finding out if you got an issue or not is pretty quick.
Okay.
A question here by Matt.
Oh, yeah.
About minutes from today. Anything that's going to roll out from this meeting?
Yeah, I will put together notes. Glad you got the tape too, because I can't read mine. I will put a little note piece together and we'll circulate it around just to make sure I haven't misrepresented what anybody said. And, you know, I don't want to attribute anything to anybody that they don't want to attribute it to them. So,
yeah, Jerry, this is Matt here. I'm not concerned about that. Just there was a lot of different conversations on a lot of different topics. And so just would be interested to see a distilled version of what you're taking from this as direction to head into these next steps.
Sure. Do. Well, we had it scheduled till 5. We're a half hour early, so there's no penalty for finishing early.
But I'll just ask, does anyone else have comments you'd like to add?
There's a hand up. Is anybody still with us?
Yeah, this is Alex at the Oregon Department of Aviation, Planning and Parking.
Okay.
Here. Sorry, I got a phone call from the FAA, I think, right when you guys started talking about the airport. So I came in at the last minute and heard airport. And I mean, if there was anything there that I can try to follow up with now, or at least, you know, send an email over to whoever I need to, just let me know, or reach out to me via phone or email, and I'll, you know, answer what I can.
I think we got pretty good feedback from Bruce. I actually listened in on your airport meeting the other day.
Good.
Yeah, we work on master plans too. So I'm involved in the airports. So I'm used to dealing with the FAA stuff. So I understand some of the limitations, but I'm just intrigued what's going on. So I thought I'd just check in on that.
Great.
Yeah, so Alex, the airport came up in the context of employment. Bruce was talking about, you know, the number of jobs and so forth and so on. So it came up in that context in terms of if we include the airport, it, then Aurora is sort of a net importer of jobs. We have more jobs than working age people. Without the airport, the city has less jobs than working age people. And then I guess the second theme about the airport that I heard was, you know, our desire to make sure we have compatible land uses around it. You know, we don't want high density anything immediately south of the runway.
Height limits.
Height limits, you know, no places of public assembly like churches or schools or, you know, anything. When I say high density, I mean in terms of people. So nothing with high employees per acre or nothing residential, or those sorts of things.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Feel free to please send me a, you know, an email if there is any questions around any of those things. I mean, of course, you know, there is kind of a fine line between our, you know, our state owned property versus the, you know, other side of the fence. So, but, you know, happy to discuss those things and yeah, send me an email or a phone call and we'll discuss as needed.
Great. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Alex.
Yeah.
Thank you, Alex.
All right. Is that, can we get that it? All right.
Hearing none, we will adjourn at 4:30.
You get to hit again?